This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
Well, guys and girls, welcome back to Outside the Round. Today, a very special guest. We've talked about wanting to mix it up on the podcast. And when you talk about personalities in town, entrepreneurs in Nashville, guys who have connections to music and just the town in general, there's one guy that really comes to mind. His name is Sean Porter, also known as Big Daddy. Brother,
thanks for having me.
Dude, it's good to, like, I think we might have met somewhere along the way, but it's good to, like, formally meet you in the flesh right now, because I gotta tell you, Daddy's Dogs has been a big part of my Nashville experience, from working downtown on Broadway to now we do 13 events a month all throughout the fucking city.
Hell yeah.
And it's like, you can't go anywhere and not see, like it's like a beacon of light after just like a late night, and it's just the spot to be. And
thanks, man.
Even during COVID, the shows you guys were doing with the bands performing on the roof, like just being such good parts of the community. So how's everything been going in your world, dude?
It's good. It's been busy. You know, we're getting ready to open two new locations, one in Franklin, one in Madison.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, construction and all the woes that go with that. But it's been a lot of fun, learning a lot, and I'm really excited to, you know, have these new spots and get them open and get some dogs slinging out.
Get some dogs, man. The best meat on the street, bro.
Heck yeah.
That's what I was seeing on the website. So you, before you got into doing the Daddy's Dogs thing, before you really like went out and did your own business, mm-hmm. you spent time out on the road, right?
Yeah, like 13 years. You know, I did everything from the van life, Warped Tour circuit, all the way up to,
God bless you,
you know, multi-bus, semi kind of thing.
Did you ever spend time in a bandwagon?
I didn't actually ever do a bandwagon,
oh, really?
But I built out, did you ever, the rocket ships, did you ever do those?
No.
It was like a Sprinter that would be built out like a bus.
Oh.
So it had like bunks in the back of a Sprinter.
Oh, okay. So, like the coffin bunks. Like
they're pretty small.
Yeah.
But, so we were renting them so much, and I was like, I just got stoned one night, and I looked around and I was like, I bet I could build one of these. And so we got home from the tour, and I like messaged the artist I was with. I was like, hey, if I built a van, if it wasn't as like, you know, cream of the crop as those, would you rent it from me? And he's like, yeah, I'd rather give you the money.
Yeah.
And so I've like, you know, next tour was in like a month and a half, and went, conned the bank into giving me a check to buy a van.
Yeah.
And built one out. And, you know, that kind of was one of my first entrepreneurial like adventures.
Yeah. What was, ideas are my favorite thing.
They're the best thing.
Nikki T and I have a list of so many things, like where it was like, originally it was supposed to be like an ideas thing, but even if we're not high, like we just call them ideas because it just sounds better. Like
for sure.
There's something about getting in your mind, and because I'm California sober, so I had to quit drinking coming up on 8 years now, which
congrats.
Is cool.
Thank That's you. Awesome.
And it's just, life is so much easier, not with a hangover, but opening up your mind through herbal substances the good Lord put here for a reason. Like,
for sure.
Literally a plant out of the ground. And I feel like that's something that's happening within Nashville and like within Tennessee right now. There seems to be a big movement and all of that stuff.
Here's hoping, man. I'm from Washington, and so
you're West Coast guy.
Yeah, we're West Coast, and you know, it's so easy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's the thing I miss the most, I think, just the ease of getting scheduled once.
Yeah, it's like, I'm a New York guy, so like the Northeast, it's all legal. It's like, you have like the two ends, and then you have like some pockets in the Midwest, but we just need one person to break, one state to break through the Bible Belt.
I know.
And then we're good.
Well, you know, Alabama has medical, Arkansas has rec now.
Yeah.
So it's coming, it's all around us. Now it's just coming. Convincing our people who are supposed to represent us what we want, even though they don't listen.
Yeah. And now, when did you start, as far as like, you talk about like the people like that make the decisions and stuff, you were in the trenches during COVID, bro.
Yeah.
Like, I was
elbow deep.
You were elbow deep. And being able to keep the music thing going. And I think a lot of people like coming out of COVID did a lot for the Daddy's Dogs brand, and that you guys were mm-hmm. providing music with those drive-in shows out there on the West Side. Like,
Hydea, baby. Hydea.
Hydea.
Yeah, that's what it was. I like rolled into the shop one day and I like looked up at the containers that we had there, and I was like, you know, what if we did a Beatles thing here one day? And then COVID happened, and it was like, you know, we were just throwing shit at the wall. What would stick? And like, yeah, what could we do that's like gonna bring people here? Because not a lot of people understand, like, our business is very fractured, and so, you know, we have our shop in the Nations, but it services all of our carts and everything. So about 75-80% of our business is outside of those walls.
Yeah.
So when COVID happened, 80% of our business was gone. You know, bars shut down. Like, we couldn't do late nights. Events never happened. There's no crowds gathering. So, like, everything that we're used to that is bringing in the money,
yeah,
just ended. And so it was like, you know, some people didn't even know we had a shop. And so it was like, how can we, like...
I didn't know until COVID, honestly.
How can we, like, raise awareness about this spot? And, you know, it ended up working in our favor just on a marketing side of everything. But I think, you know, the goodwill we gained from artists and the community was, you know, kind of unprecedented, which is awesome.
Yeah. How many carts do you have running right now?
We have 10 different ones, yeah. And then we're at Geodas Park, Nissan Stadium. We've got one satellite running on the weekends in Knoxville.
Wow.
And then we're also in Gatlinburg at Ober Mountain.
Stretching time zones, yeah, bro.
We are. Oh, and we're also at the Signal in Chattanooga.
Oh, dude, I love that venue.
It's a great venue. That's one of my favorite. Have you been to the new one?
Last time I went was in 21, I want to say. I've been post-COVID. Have they updated it since then?
Yeah, so last year they moved into a new building.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it's like Marathon Music Works, but with like a nice balcony.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I had a buddy that just went and saw Scott Stapp there.
Oh, hell yeah.
And he said it was fucking incredible. I bet, dude. I got to get down there and see that. So for you, you're originally from out west,
yep.
Seattle.
Yeah, just north of Seattle.
So what brought you to
music? Yeah, you know, I was on the road. I was with L. King, and we were splitting time between New York and Nashville. And so she had just kind of started doing weekends. It was when X's and O's was hitting.
What were you doing out with her?
I was road managing.
Oh, you were road managing. Yeah, tour managing.
Yeah. And I just kind of come off a broken leg and like was kind of getting back into the swing of things, and, you know, that flight from Seattle to New York, 6 hours, or Seattle to Nashville.
Sucks.
And you're doing it every fucking week, you know, you're back. And then it's like 2 days you like sometimes get like back into the swing of home, and then you're like, well, I got to leave again. And so I never found the peace in that. And so, and I'd really reached the top of my career in Seattle. You know, I was kind of, I could walk into any music venue and like just walk in, and, you know, every band up there that was anybody like I had either worked with or I didn't want to work with. And so I kind of just needed a little bit of like a shakeup and, you know, kind of a reset to just, you know, prove to myself that I still could hustle.
What was the Seattle scene like at that time? Like, because I don't, how old are you? If you know what I mean?
35.
Okay. Yeah. So you were like right at the, you were a little after the,
grunge. Grunge for sure. We had a big hardcore scene, you know, because, Tooth and Nail Records was there. So,
oh,
like,
no shit,
Under Oath,
right.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. And Berlin, all that shit. And then, you know, when I first started in the music business, I was in high school. And so it was like, I was helping the bands in my high school. Or there was a guy from my church at the time who's in another band. And they actually, like, were about to sign a Tooth and Nail and, like, we're kind of on a thing. So, like, when I was 16, I started, like, going on tour with them in the summertime or on spring break and stuff. But, yeah, hardcore scene was big then, and then kind of that Warped Tour pop punk world was like on the up and up for
the heyday of that, man. Like, I'm 29, so I was born in 95.
Yeah.
So like I remember like watching those bands come up in that Warped Tour era, and we had a channel back home called Fuse that would show like the Warped Tour roadies.
Yeah.
Like the grind that was like, there's touring, and a lot of us like country folks, like I only really did Weekend Warrior stuff.
Yep.
I think there were a couple instances where I was out for more than a weekend at a time. But the Warped Tour grind
was
unlike anything else. Like if you think the touring like Weekend Warrior stuff or like the country style of stuff versus like the Warped Tour circuit of the go, 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 and like you have to make it work and you're not getting a lot.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Dude, it's like you're at war.
Dude,
it really is.
It teaches you, like, I mean, it will teach you work ethic, because if you don't have it, you don't do not survive.
Yeah.
You know, and Kevin Lyman, the guy who started it, I, you know, a lot of how I approach Daddy's Dogs is warped. Like, I'm like, okay, well, I know, let's set a fucking tent up and do some flags and, like, you know, raise attention to us. Like,
yeah,
he was a master at getting bands to self-promote and getting, you know, creating a buzz, because at a Warped Tour, you never knew what time you were playing. So it was literally...
Oh, there was no run of show.
No. So it was like in the morning at 10:30 and gates are at 11, you found out what time you played. And so it was like, you know, you could be playing at 11 when doors open and you have to, like, go to your stage at 10:30. Yeah. And as a tour manager, you got to tell the band and make sure, hey, but there's so much extra
shit. There's no advance.
Yeah. No. So there's, it's like, no, every day is different.
PMing with no advance.
Yep. And then when you show up to do merch, it's literally just like, okay, who's there first sets where you go.
Oh, so you're sets hustling. The precedent.
So you, like, you want to get in there. You want to get next to the Under Oaths because they're going to have a huge crowd of people coming to buy their merch. If you can kind of tag along to that, here's a CD, here's a CD. We're playing right before Under Oath on the stage over here. And so it just teaches you that, you know, that grind and that hustle of, like, you know, I got to do this. And then you got to turn around. And I swear he was in bed with the drivers or something, because every drive was like, you know, overdrive is 450. So every drive is 465. Yeah. And so it's just like, well, it's just, it's one extra, like, cost.
Yeah.
On the, for the bus driver or whatever. But it's just, like, far enough to where it's like, this is a 6-hour, 8-hour drive, you know, like. And then you're doing it overnight, and you got to get there at 7 a.m. and load all your shit. So it was just, you know, it was a grind, but it definitely teaches you work ethic, teaches you how to self-promote, and the networking, you know, it teaches you how to network.
Dude, like, you probably met so many people. How many years were you out there doing that on the Warped
Tour? I did 3 different years of Warped Tour. And, yeah, I mean, you just meet, because it's some, you know, at one point, someone's leveling up.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, this person that I met at Warped Tour now is, like, got out of touring and works at Red Bull, and, like, you know, but you're still connected. Like, everyone who does Warped Tour has that kind of connection.
Yeah, it's like a brotherhood.
Yeah, we did it together. Even if we didn't know you on the tour, oh, you did Warped Tour? All right. You know, same if I'm going to hire anybody. If, like, they talk about touring, I'm like, oh, what have you done? And, oh, I did merch for this, blah, blah, blah. We did Warped Tour. I'm like, you're hired. Like, you know, pretty much, like, did you make it? Yeah, I survived. Okay, cool. Come on, let's do this. You can make hot dogs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it definitely, like, it's a wild game out there, and kudos to Kevin, because he definitely taught me some life skills that I'm still using today.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, there's skills that I learned from touring, because I was doing the radio thing in New York and New Jersey, the promo radio thing where you're making like $10 an hour sleeping on your boss's couch in the office because your house is so far away. And then you're waking up, driving the van to some 5K this, doing that and whatever, and then bouncing on Broadway and then being on the road. Like, my whole life's been kind of like that too.
Yeah.
Or like, you're just kind of like all over the place and you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
I love problem solving. Like, I mean, that's what a tour manager does.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I do now basically for Daddy's Dogs, is solve fucking other people's problems half the time, but they end up becoming mine. So
when did the Daddy's Dogs idea come to start? Because you got your name Big Daddy while out on the road.
On the road, yeah. It was kind of one of those, like, I just started calling everybody Big Daddy, like, randomly one day.
Like, yo, what's up, Big Daddy?
Yeah, and, like, everybody was like, why? Does this guy not know my name? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I would literally call everybody Big Daddy. And it was just, like, one tour, and then they flipped it and started calling me Big Daddy, and then it just stuck. But, yeah, Daddy's Dogs, like, 2000, golly, man, it was, like, 10 years ago now, probably.
Oh, wow.
I got into a scooter accident. I ride, like, scooters.
Yeah, you do the cross-country thing. The Seattle, all over. What's the organization and the scooter club?
Soldiers of Destiny.
Soldiers of Destiny.
Yeah, we just got back from Morocco, but we do all sorts of crazy
That's
shit.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so I got into an accident. I broke my leg, was off the road for like 9 months, had to have like 2 different surgeries, you know, bunch of stuff. It was crazy. And so I remember I was like just smoking a joint with a buddy outside of a bar in Seattle. And, you know, I was depressed. He could tell I was like bummed out. He's just trying to cheer me up. And he's just like, you know what, Daddy, you should look into the hot dog game. And I like laughed and was like, Daddy's Dogs has a pretty good ring to it. And we just started talking about that. He was like a business guy and kind of has like you know, his ear to the ground on fun, unique businesses that kind of can make some good money or whatever. Yeah. And so I laughed, didn't think about it. And then in my recovery, you know, you're sitting there and there's nothing to do. You're icing your leg. You're like, all I could do is like Google or watch Netflix. And you've seen everything a million times at that point. So you're like, well, and you just start Googling random stuff. And then I just would Google hot dogs. And then I like would start Googling like famous hot dog carts or famous this. And there wasn't really any, you know, there's Pink's in LA, Nathan's, but that's kind of a different thing.
Yeah.
Vienna Beef is kind of, you know, it's the beef. It's not, there's not a hot dog cart brand that's like, hey, this is what we do. We're a hot dog cart kind of thing. And so I was like, I bet, you know, I just had this picture of Daddy's Dogs kind of immediately in my head. I was like, you know, pirate flag with me is the, instead of the skull and crossbones, it's hot dogs. Like I literally came up with it in 5 minutes. And it just, you know, the next 6 months when I was recovering, I just kept going back and Googling more and doing more research. And eventually it got to the point where I was like, I bet I could do this. Like, you know, and I don't think it'd take a lot of bandwidth. I was definitely wrong about that. but I was like, I bet I could do this. And, you know, have some revolving money when I'm on the road. I got the bus going. I got this, just different outlet streams, because the bus kind of kept me afloat during the whole thing, because I wasn't making any money, but I was, that was still on the road.
So the bus is in what? Like you had a bus?
Yeah. My Sprinter van, yeah, my Mercedes Sprinter.
Oh, and you were just riding?
I was just renting it out to people.
Oh, and nice, so, yeah.
You know, while I couldn't make money on the road, I was like, hey, at least this is like, you know, I'm paying rent still. I'm keeping food on the table kind of thing. And so I was like, if I could have a couple more of those, like then the road could be fun again. You know, not fun again, but it was just like, then the road's like, I could be more picky with the tours. Yeah. I'm not grinding to be like, okay, I need to get out there 250 days a year, you know? And you're like, yeah. Which is a lot.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And so, you know, I just finally was moving down here, went out on Broadway with a couple friends. Came out and there's like one lone hot dog guy over there, just dirty dogging, like, you know, no gloving, like just reaching in, grabbing shit with his hands. Like, and you're drunk, so you're like, yeah, like load it up, you know? And I like was eating the hot dog, looking at my friend who lived here, who was in a band I had toured with for a little bit called This Providence. And I was like, dude, Dan, I was like, what would you say if I like just started a hot dog company? And like did this shit on the, you know, and he's like, I'd say you're an idiot, basically. Like, you're stupid. What are you talking about? I was like, cool. That's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Because it was going to like fire me up to like want to do it even
more.
Yeah,
let me
like,
prove,
fuck you.
Let me prove you wrong. Fuck you, yeah, dude. Exactly. I can do this shit.
Exactly. So then the next like 4 months, I was like, all right, it's go time. So I called a friend of mine from high school who was living here with his wife, also a road guy, playing keys for a bunch of people. And, I was like, dude, have this idea. We can make some passive income hot dog stand. We'll run it out of my garage. What do you think? And he's like, I think that's stupid, but let me talk to my wife, you know? So I was like, okay, cool. He talks to his wife, comes back in. He's like, I'm in, let's go. So we do it. We just kind of like start rolling with it. You know, we find the dog and all that kind of stuff. Start finding a bakery to do buns and, you know, just kind of in my head, like, let's elevate this. This has to be the best thing possible. And so our first day, we get out there dogging, you know, Demumbrian. We're right outside of Live Oak.
Dogging on Demumbrian.
Yeah, baby.
Let's go.
That was our first day. And it was before that tower where, you know, across the street was even there.
Yeah, it was a parking lot, right?
Yeah, they were building
Shoney's,
right,
like the parking. Was Shoney's still there?
Shoney's wasn't there. They were literally building that tower.
Oh, okay.
The construction guys. Yeah. And we had one guy come up who was an intern. I'll never forget, he was an intern at Sony, and he's like, oh, this is my first week in Nashville, blah, blah, blah. I want to support you guys. And I was like, cool. You know, here's your dog. First dog we sold, only dog we sold that day. And so afterwards, like, we look over, and there's all these construction guys. I was like, we cooked, you know, 15 dogs or whatever. Let's go give it to these guys, and maybe tomorrow they'll come over and get a dog once they see how good it is. Well, it, like, backfired on me, because then they just waited until we were getting ready to close up, came over, like, I got any dogs left? And I was like, fuck you, dude. No, I don't. So, you know, the first little bit was, like, deflating as fuck. I remember the first, you know, 6-7 months.
And that's then, how a new business can be.
Yeah, and we were literally gonna like hang the towel up. Pretty, you know, we were getting ready to, and I remember we found like our spot in front of Winners and Losers, basically, and we were like, oh, late night. Okay, we'll do this, because we were doing lunches and that kind of thing, and trying to do it during the daytime. And we were downtown in front of LNC Tower. I was like, how can we not be selling anything? Everyone's coming down here for lunch or whatever. And finally, we like found our niche doing late night, and then the race was on. And once we kind of found that spot, it was like, okay, how many of these can we do? And shortly after, found Demumbrian, and then we found Broadway, and then it just kind of compounded and just got crazy.
Yeah, I used to look forward to at the end of my shift at Whiskey Row, being like, all right, I'm gonna deal with all this bullshit for 8 hours,
right?
And then I'm gonna get done, and I'm gonna go back in that parking lot behind Whiskey Row, and I'm gonna get me a daddy's dog.
Hell yeah, dude.
And it used to be something that me and the fellas would talk about, getting our daddy's dog at the end of the
night. I love it.
Honestly, like, it's a part of the late night culture. Like, you can't talk about the bar scene. Like, when I have friends visiting, I'm like, yeah, you go out on Broadway, and then right here, like, go get a daddy's dog at the end of the night. Like, it's gonna make you feel better in the morning. I personally am a Music City guy with my daddy's dog. You know, I haven't ventured in. Like, I know you're a Seattle guy, so like the cream cheese thing, like, you're so experimental with your stuff, which as a Northeastern guy who's a lover of sandwiches, I love like the fat sandwich culture, like the food truck culture in Jersey and New York. I feel like you guys do that, but with hot dogs, which is really fucking cool. Like, where does all the experimentation come from? I'm sure some of it has to do with Hydea's.
Yeah.
But like, where, like, what was your first like kind of crazy dog?
Oh, we've had some wild ones, you know, and a lot of it is just like playing off travels and everything. You know, okay, I've been to New York. What do they do there? Okay, sauerkraut, spicy mustard, that's the classic. Yeah. You know, or like Seattle, what do they do there? And literally, that is what we do in Seattle. You know?
Cream cheese on dogs.
Exactly. And our first, before we even had, I think, the Music City, we did the Dallas dog. And it was trying to do like barbecue. And it was basically a Music City. I don't think it had bacon. I think it had jalapenos on it or something. But, you know, just trying different things and being like, what's working, what isn't? And being okay if it didn't work was a big thing. And then, you know, we're looking at, you know, I'm thinking about Madison right now, and we're looking at maybe doing a bigger menu there. And it's kind of, you know, on the carts, we have 9 ingredients. That's all we have space for.
Yeah, it's a cart. There's only so much you can bring out there.
9 ingredients, that's all you get. You know, you have 9 slots. Yeah. And so we were really utilizing, how can we utilize those 9 ingredients between those 6 original dogs? Now, with our bigger locations, okay, we can step up a little bit. And the Nation's is very small, too. You know, our kitchen's about 300 square feet, so it's not a lot of room. And so we're a little more limited there, but we did expand. Printer's Alley, limited on space, 72 square feet. It's fucking tiny. So, you know, what can we cram in there? Had to kind of shrink it down. With Franklin, you know, we're kind of in between, so we're going to kind of maybe push what we can do. But with Madison, we purposely overbuilt it to be able to have more room to kind of spread our wings and do some different shit and, you know, have a bigger menu if we want, all that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited about that. I'm kind of finally starting to get into the mindset of, okay, what else are we going to do? Because there still needs to be some of that cross utilization.
What pairs well with hot dogs? Like, what fits on a menu of daddy's dogs? Like, I know, like, you guys do the tot thing, right?
Yeah, so we're doing tots, and we do loaded tots, chili tots. We do elote tots with, like, grilled corn on it and everything, which are really good. I'm thinking about doing some tacho kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, doing some nacho cheese possibly, or taco meat that like then we use and do a taco dog kind of thing.
It's like an ode to the taco carts.
Yeah,
as well. Like,
yeah,
diversifies it a little bit.
Yeah, and so it, you know, just kind of it's sitting down thinking what makes sense, what is true to daddy's dogs, what am I gonna like, you know. It's a little bit gluttonous of like, you know, what, you know, you're fucking drunk at 4 a.m. or whatever. Yeah. Like, what do you get on a hot dog, what do you want on it? And so I just kind of think about that, think about the customers, and we get all the submissions. I mean, we get 5 or 6 submissions a day.
Oh,
like,
really?
You should do this dog, or you should do this. And so some of them, I'm like, hey, that's not fucking bad.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them, I'm like, you're an idiot, but I don't tell them that.
No.
But yeah, so, it, you know, just kind of taking it in from stuff I've had. And when I go on, I still travel quite a bit. luckily we've been doing a lot of festivals and that kind of thing. And then my scooter club's really active and traveling and stuff. So
talk about the scooter club a little bit. What does a scooter club like entail? Cause like I have cousins that go to Virginia Tech and they have a pretty good sized scooter club down there.
Heck yeah.
Like, I know that like on certain universities and stuff, like there's that. And like in certain cities, like New York, I feel like it'd be tough to have the scooter club with all the driving and all the stuff in there.
I'd love to go scoot New York. I haven't ever done it actually.
I feel like it'd be pretty epic.
Oh,
like,
it'd be
really have to be.
You got to be aggressive, which is my favorite kind of riding.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I joined a scooter club 13 years ago now. And it kind of similarly started. There's a few guys in college, got little 50 cc's to rip around town, and they all used to wear capes. And one night, like a really bad wind caught the cape and like cover the guy's eyes. He's like, this is fucking dangerous. We should do something different than capes. And so then they ended up doing like these animal helmets that you can just stretch over.
Okay.
And so it's like, you know, one guy had a rabbit, another guy had a bear one and all this kind of stuff. And so pretty soon there was like four or five of them. And I connected with them. It was kind of like right when Sons of Anarchy had just started coming out. So we were like,
one of the best TV shows.
Yeah, it's
ever.
Great.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, let's start a scooter club. So they got like nine dudes together, started it. And then I was the 11th person to join. But I met the president. One of the bands I had toured with was in it. He was one of the original nine. And then met the president just at a bar. He's like, you have a scooter? I was like, yeah. He's like, I'm going on a ride tomorrow. You want to come? I was like, yeah, let's go. So we went out, did like a whole thing. And then I was like, I want to do this all the fucking time. He's like, I got a scooter club. You should join it. And I was like, all right. And that was kind of it. And now we've literally gone like all over the world. You know, we went from Florida to Seattle, made a documentary called Slow Ride Home.
Oh, I have to check that out.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Check it out. It's $3, but it's cool. Well worth it. So
yeah.
We did that. You know, I've done trips down from Seattle to Montana or Seattle down to San Francisco.
Through like beautiful country, dude. The landscapes.
Oh,
and on a scooter, you're actually...
You're experiencing it.
It's different than being in a car or a truck. It's different than being on a bike.
Yeah.
Like, it's... Because you're not moving. Like, how fast do those things go?
45, 50.
Yes. So you're not speeding through like you're on a bike. Like you're actually able to really soak it all up
for sure.
Enjoy that shit.
For sure. It's so much fun, man. And like, you know, I always laugh because, you know, people, we have a shirt that literally says, why don't you get a real motorcycle? And like part of the reason why I did the Florida to Seattle thing was to be like, because you won't even do that on your fucking motorcycle, you know, like, and it's kind of like, you know, when people, if I see a motorcycle out there and we're talking and I was like, how many miles does your bike have on it? And they're like, oh, 17,000. I'm like, fucking this bitch, this 125's got 50 and I put all of them on it, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, it's just a lot of fun. We love to ride. You know, we're planning an Ireland trip for next year.
You really get into the Sons of Anarchy bit then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Dude, I love that ride through Belfast and
I know.
Shit. That's really cool.
I know. One of our guys is from up there, and so he's like got a whole family situation that's going to help us kind of get us bikes and all that kind
of
stuff.
That's awesome. That's so cool to have that like sense of community. And it's like a fraternity almost where like you have your guys and I'm sure they've gotten to see daddy's dogs grow.
They have.
They've gotten to come out here and experience Nashville. What were some of the big cultural differences for you? Cause you've gotten to travel around like being on tour, spending time in New York, spending obviously time in your homeland of Seattle. What were some big cultural differences when you first got here to the Southeast? Because I know I've had some coming from New York down to here. Completely different world.
For sure. Way different, you know. Like, just the mix of, you know, Seattle is super liberal, super left-leaning. And so just the mix of culture here in that regard of, like, conservatives and liberals kind of interacting together and, you know, all...
And then the moderates
being able to have conversations about it, really, and not feel like you... or getting jammed down your throat from somebody or, you know, that, you know, Southern culture in itself, the friendliness is way different than Seattle. Yes. Everyone talks about the Seattle freeze, which is totally true. Like, you're walking down the street, someone says hello to you, you're like, what the fuck? Was he talking to me? And, you know, yeah. And here it's like, if you don't say ho, they're like, fuck you. Like, why didn't you say hi to me?
Yeah,
and
I'm
like,
asshole.
Yeah, this is like way different. So, you know, getting used to some of that, you know, drivers are terrible here.
Oh, bro.
It's
fucking worse.
And I think it's because, like, it's one of those places where no one's from there. So, like, in Seattle, everyone drives the Seattle way. They were all taught how to drive like people in Seattle.
Yeah.
Everyone in New York probably drive like New Yorkers.
We drive,
you know,
like jerk-offs.
Yeah, exactly.
But everybody's driving everybody like a jerk-off, so it's
and
okay.
Everyone learned to drive that way.
Yeah.
You come here and you put all that together and nobody knows what the fuck to do ever, and they're all terrible.
Yes.
And so it's like, you know, that's something where I just, like, I have, like, a little bit of road rage, and if someone, like, you know, if they've pissed me off, I'm like in their fucking face. And here or in Seattle, I feel like if that happens, they're like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Here they're like, what, motherfucker? You know, you're like, right? Oh shit, okay, yeah, sorry, dude. Bro.
Yeah.
So it's just a little, like, you know, it's a little different in that sense. Like, there is, like, more like, don't wrong me, but, like, I'm nicer before you wrong me kind of mentality.
Yeah, the merging here is a
it
challenge.
Doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, like that yield that's right on, like, 40 going into town.
Yeah.
Like that split where you can, like, go, like, follow the sign down towards Huntsville or, like, go into town.
Yep.
There's that yield sign. Nobody fucking yields.
No.
Like, you might
they don't
as well
even know
just,
what yielding
no,
is.
No, it's just there. They're like, what does this word mean?
Yeah.
You know? It's
what's that red triangle? No one taught me. That's the thing that blows my mind here. In Nashville, you don't need to take driver's ed. There's no classes you need to take. So you just turn 16 and you go, I want to fuck, give me my fucking license. And they're like, okay. Here it is. Go.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's how it is.
It's stupid. Yeah. That is dumb.
Yes.
Like, that's something that needs change. You know, I mean, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and the population here just booming, especially in the 10 years that you've been here. I'm coming up on 6 years of being here, and the city's changed tremendously in the 6 years that I've been here. So I can only imagine what it's been like for 10.
Yeah, I've been here for 8.
Oh, you've been here for 8. Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to hit 9 soon. But yeah, dude, it's changed exponentially. It's crazy. I came right. I feel like the roller coaster had, like, just started ticking up.
Yeah.
You know, and we're still going up. So it's like, you know, it's still growing. And I always say it on everything. It's like, you know, when I came, I feel like it was the land of opportunity. And I still feel like that in a lot of ways, that there's still so much opportunity here.
Yeah, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're in music, whether you're in healthcare, whether you're just looking for the place where you feel that kind of energy, like, it reminds me of that feeling, like, growing up in New York, where there is just this energy and just this excitement, and there's so much being created and so much being built, to where it is that thriving kind of city that just motivates you to want to do your shit the right way.
Exactly.
You know?
Or, yeah, and it's like, you know, I haven't really seen it not work out for somebody that comes in and works hard.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like how I'm built, is like, you know, I'm not the smartest guy. I'm not the best at, I was never, when I talk to people about touring, I'd always say, like, look, like, I'm not the best at this, but there's no one that's going to be a better hang than me, and there's no one that is going to work harder than me.
The hang and the working hard is 95% of the shit, dude. The hang is so important, and that's anybody that's not the artist that's paying you on the gig. That's everybody but the artist. That's from the driver to the low man on the crew totem pole, to the guys and girls in the band, to, of course, like, the road crew guys, like the guys that TM'd, like ourselves, or the sound guys, like the merch guy. It's all about the hang.
It is, you know,
so fucking vital.
I mean, it's just, the music business is, especially, I mean, all of business, I found, is who you know and learning from the people that have come before you or your peers, and, like, not having an ego about it.
Yeah.
You know, early on in my career when I was touring, you know, probably the first tour I really ever did, like, I got it, went from merch to tour manager in one tour.
What tour?
Like,
what tour was that? Who was that out?
Oh, it was This Providence was their name.
Okay,
like
This Providence. Yeah, so the same guy that you had that moved here. Okay, cool.
And he started a different band called Lonely Benson when he moved here, and it was more like jazz club kind of stuff.
All
it was
right.
really cool.
All right. That's
it's
a cool
really
vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I remember kind of cocking an ego and being like, "Oh, these guys, like, I did so good at merch, I'll just crush this tour managing thing." And like the very first show I did, like very first as a tour manager, there, you know, you gotta plan what time you leave and how far the drive is and where you're staying and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm all planning all this. I was like, we need to leave at 10:30 in the morning, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we leave at 10:30. Well, I forgot about time change, so we were an hour late. And then on the sheets, you know, the sheets that you get for your shows or whatever, there's two different addresses. There's the promoter address and the venue address. Well, I plugged the promoter address in, not the venue address. And the venue was like an extra 2 hours.
Oh, no.
So we basically showed up at the time the band was supposed to be playing. No sound check, nothing. They were so mad. And it was like, oh, they like literally told me, like, if this is how it's going to be, you're not going to make it. You know, and I was like, oh, shit, I better, like, kind of got your ego checked really quick.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing. And then it just becomes becoming a sponge and being like, what does this guy do? And then listening to the band that, you know, he's out with and what do they bitch about? Okay, I need to do that better. And then this band, what is that guy, what are they bitching about? Yeah. And just making sure that, you know, you're constantly listening. Because that's how you learn. And, you know, being willing to just, you know, take something that everyone else is doing and make it your own. That, you know, that's kind of how I approached everything.
Yeah, I've learned in the country realm, especially, like, a good tour manager, you don't even know that guy's there.
Yeah.
The stuff's just kind of getting done. And if there's a fire, nobody in the band even hears about it. Depending on the fire, obviously, like, you're traveling international, you have a fly date, and the fucking guitars aren't there. The band's going to know about that.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to, like, the smaller stuff, like, just putting out the fires and not making a big deal out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm an expressive dude. Like, I didn't do well with that early on, but I had to learn that in my journey, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so much I learned in those early years. It's so funny. Looking back at how I used to do stuff or... you know, whatever. It's just like, went through my computer recently and found like a bunch of old like sheets that I'd use. And I was like, how was I doing this? Like, it was literally like Microsoft Paint. And then I'd like, you know, plug in like a text box here to make a day sheet with the logo. And I was like, and now there's like, you know, Master Tour and all these things that, that folks use can like, you can make your own. But I was literally doing that in like, Word and Paint or whatever.
Yeah.
And making it work, but it was just like, that was, I probably spent hours doing that.
Oh, dude. You know? Yeah, dude. That's what I used to do. Yeah. And then I used to try to get cute with it and put like nearby things for the guys to do during the day.
I always
and would. Then nobody ever fucking did anything with that. So I'm like, why am I taking the time to research where the local music shop is or the local thrift store so the guys can go in and buy a fucking amp from a pawn shop that's just going to take more fucking room in our trailer and our
pack. Then when you don't do it, they're like, you know, why the fuck isn't the Guitar Center on here today? And you're like, mother, the one day I don't do it, you like want to go to Guitar Center? It's like, I feel like it's like, well, the option's not there now. Now that's what I want. And you're like, golly.
Yeah.
But
so a question I'm sure you've been asked a bunch.
Yeah.
Is a hot dog a sandwich or is it its own thing?
Not a sandwich.
I think it's its own thing, personally.
Yeah, it's definitely not a sandwich.
Because I feel like a sandwich is like enclosed. Like
sandwich is two separate pieces of bread.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
And it's in the name, submarine sandwich. That's a sandwich with one piece of bread that's cut down the middle. But that's in the name. It says sandwich.
Yeah.
You know, hamburger, cheeseburger, technically sandwich.
Yes, because it's the two pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the bun is cut, whereas the hot dog.
Did you ever play the sandwich game on tour?
The sandwich game? No.
Oh,
what
man.
Is this?
The sandwich game was great. So the sandwich game was a game, and like it's once you know it, you're in it. You're playing.
Okay.
So you take a bite of a sandwich, and you put it back on your plate, right? You have to put a shield on it. You have to put something from outside the sandwich on top, French fry, on top the sandwich. If it's shielded, you can't do anything. But if you put that sandwich down, it's unshielded, someone can come in and just punch the fuck out of that sandwich, dude.
Okay, we might have to do this because we're taking Raise Rowdy on the road and going to a lot of festivals this year. We're
start like punching sandwiches, dude.
I'm just going to deck Nikki T's sandwich. He's going to be like, what the fuck, bro?
Right? Yeah. So, dude, it's such a fun game to do on tour. I remember we did it on a couple, and I told this band about it, and I had brought my sound guy from another thing with them.
Yeah.
And so we'd given them, like, 2 weeks of, like, you know, You're unshielded, you know, throwing your fist up. You're unshielded. And, you know, okay. And then finally we were out at this place. We were in New Mexico, I'll never forget. And we were in an RV, but we were staying outside of this guy's house that the band knew. And
yeah.
And he had been texting the band, "I'm taking you guys to get these Poblano pepper burgers. They're the best in the city, blah, blah, blah." You know, and so we're all sitting down and everyone's stoked on these burgers. We've been talking about them all day. Yeah. Burgers come, you know. Me and the sound guy like lock eyes, and we're like, the singer's like right across from me. Sound guy's right there. And we like lock eyes and just like look at the sandwich, and it's just no shield. And we both just, I mean, burger went everywhere, dude. Like, and the singer, awesome. The singer like eyes just started welling and just like pushed his chair back and fucking left. And we didn't, he's like, bus call was like, you know, 9 a.m. the next day. He like walked up to the van at 9 a.m. I was like, "All right, guys, here I am. Like, just needed a night to cool off." And it was just like, I guess we're done with the sandwich game. Like,
we're retiring this shit on this gig. Yeah. We'll get him on the next gig.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fucking awesome. What was like the wildest thing you were putting on the sandwich? Because you were saying like a French fry or something. So is it like you're lifting up the top of the sandwich and just adding to the sandwich?
No, it's just like on the top of the bun. And you wanted something usually you'd go smaller. So you want something where they don't realize it's on there. Because if you smash the sandwich with a shield on it, you owe that person the sandwich.
Oh.
So it's like if you smash it and there was a French fry on it, and they're like, "Fry."
Or a potato chip.
Or a chip or whatever. Yeah, then they'd be like, "Oh, fuck, I owe you a sandwich now." You know? And so it was like the give and take. Or you'd like pretend, we'd do it a lot where you'd pretend you'd take a bite, and it only activates as soon as you take a bite.
Okay.
So you'd take a fake bite, you'd put the sandwich down, someone smash and be like, "I hadn't taken a bite yet, motherfucker."
Oh, you bluff the fuck out of them.
exactly. Or you like slip like a napkin in as they're rounding up, and then they're like, "Fuck," you know, like just, so yeah.
That's awesome.
The sandwich game goes way back. I mean, those early days of touring, you know, you're having to like, I was living on $5 a day, where it's like you gotta like figure out some fun stuff to keep your mind off of that.
Yeah, you're just in a van with a bunch of dudes
yeah.
going and doing it because you fucking love it. Like, did you have aspirations like being were you a musician or like?
No, I wasn't a musician. I'm very awful at all things music.
And same.
You'd think after 13 years, something would have rubbed off.
Yeah.
All I can do is like a G to check the fucking thing works, you know? But no, I wanted to be like a fucking manager, you know. I wanted to be like the Shep Gordon of you know, the Warped Tour world, kind of.
What band really inspired that to you're like, "I want to work in music"? Because I'm sure there's like growing up, you have to have a band that's like you're so passionate about and like you start going to shows and following that you're like, "I want to be involved in this, but I don't know how to play. I'm not a singer. I'm not a writer."
So a friend of mine's older brother was like an acoustic singer-songwriter, John Mayer guy, would play at coffee shops in town. Yeah. And my dad was in radio for a little bit.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he did like, he had his own night show for a little bit and then did Traffic and stuff. And so I kind of grew up with just music like around me in that sense. And my buddy's brother, you know, started playing gigs at coffee shops. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm going to go on like a coffee shop tour." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'll help you. Like, we'll just call coffee shops together and like see if we can get you shows." And so we did.
Booking agent.
Yeah, basically. So we did that. Yeah. And then, you know, he introduced, through him and some other friends, I met my buddy David, who was in a band called Endeavor. And it was like this like rock band, like Incubus kind of style.
Cool. Yeah.
And I was like, "These guys are fucking awesome." That was who was like, they were looking at getting signed by Tooth and Nail and all this kind of stuff. And had a really big Seattle following, would play like to like 800 people in Seattle. And we're doing the summer I turned 16, did a tour through California. And so I was like, "Oh, if you need a merch guy, let me know," you know, and tagged along with them for that, driving the van and doing merch. They had no idea I was 16 at the time. They thought I was like a youth leader at the church that we were at.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I was like doing sound for the church.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I was like, I can't play music, but I want to be around it. So I'll learn how to do sound. I'll learn how to do merch. I'll learn how to do these different things. So then I'm like, you know, when you do go on the road, you're more of an asset if you know different pieces of the pie.
Yeah, being a Swiss Army knife.
Exactly.
As much shit as you possibly can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and so, yeah, that's kind of how it all started. And then I lived with that Endeavor group for a little bit. We lived in a double-wide trailer, you know, in between tours. And there was like six guys and a couple of their girlfriends all living there. It was crazy and stupid.
With guys, I can't imagine living full-time with guys that I'm on the road with. But I guess the way that you were touring, you were with them more times than not anyway.
Yeah, and we weren't touring. Like, it's like, you know, it was like, okay, here's a three-weeker. And then it was like, spring break's coming. We'll do something here. Because all of them were still in, like, their first year of college. They just graduated high school.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, their parents were more of like, you need to go to school. And, like, you can't keep living this rock dream or whatever. And so when I went on tour with them, some of the guys were doing, like, homework in the back as you're going, you know. And I couldn't even, like, go into the bars that we were playing half the time. Like, I remember we played this one place in L.A. And, like, I literally, they were like, you have to leave as soon as they pull. Like, as soon as they're done playing, you have to be, like, out of the building. And I just had to, like, stand there and wait for them to, like, bring all the gear back so I could, like, start helping break it down. So, yeah, it was. I just would help where I could, and then, you know, it kind of just kind of took a bunch of turns. A friend of mine got a gig playing drums for This Providence, and then I went out with them, and then that was kind of really opening. They were a real band, like, oh, they're on Fueled by Ramen, and, you know, they're touring with Paramore and all this kind of stuff. And so that's when it was like, oh, shit, this is rad.
Yeah.
You know, and really opened yourself, and, like, you realize how tiny of a bubble you were in.
Bro,
living in,
yeah.
You know, we didn't do vacations really as a family growing up. Like, I'd really been to, like, Seattle or Medford, Oregon. Those were, like, the two places I'd basically been. And so, you know, everywhere is so different. You go to California, like, what the fuck? And you go to New York, and you're just like, as a 17-year-old kid,
you're like, I can't even see the sky.
Yeah, exactly.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
Do you think that all those experiences, I would imagine they have, like, helped you with having a business here in Nashville, like knowing how band guys are, knowing the musician culture, the gig culture, I think has helped establish you as a business owner here in town, because
totally.
That's your clientele. That's what we all are. 90% of us have worked in music for the most part in some capacity.
Totally, man. Yeah. I mean, so much of that I've learned, you know, from time on the road and taking those things. And with gig culture and everything, like, I would rather hire road guys and work around their schedule 9 times out of 10 than, like, hiring just someone off the street, because, like, I connect with them. I know they're a good work guy, and, like, they've been with a couple bands that are reputable, and, like, you know, there's not crazy weird things on their resume. It's like, you know, this guy's, like, got it in him. Like I said, the work ethic of people on the road and all that, and just their mental, like, how they think is different.
Yeah.
Because you're always thinking of problems, or you're thinking of how to make things more efficient, or how to do this, you know, different, or even loading in when you're doing, like, a big stadium gig or something. Like, how can we do this as fast as we can, you know, and come out with the best outcome?
Yeah, playing Tetris in the trailer of how to pack the fucking gear, like, doing all that. Like,
yeah, and different.
Those problem-solving skills, to where if they're out by themselves, out at the cart late night on a Saturday night, and they run into something, they'll be able to handle it.
Exactly, yeah. With us doing our festivals, like, there's little tricks of, like, that I've learned from, you know, when we used to pack semis and stuff, of, like, okay, each row before you put the bars in, you have a picture of, like, what it's supposed to look like, so you can look and be like, shit, the grill's not here, you know, or whatever, just those little things. And, like, my team are always like, you are so, like, why, like, how did you come up with that or whatever? And it's like, I just literally saw one guy on a tour do it, and I was like, that is a fucking genius idea.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take
that's
it.
That's a good pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've had guys like that work in music and that are doing it. Have you had like artists that have come up working in the Daddy's Dogs? Has he been doing it now long enough where like folks move to town and they're looking for something to do to make some money? Like,
yeah,
Daddy's Dog, it seems like, has been a ground for that. Like, obviously, JD has shared his story on this podcast before. How'd you first meet JD and what was he like as a Daddy's Dog guy?
Oh, JD was great. You know,
he's got that hustle, dude.
He does. And like, JD, I like, you know, I mean, there was a point where I was like begging him to keep working and he just was doing me a favor by doing that. But, you know, spreading himself too thin with John and then got the Seagale gig and stuff. But I love JD. You know, I'll always be in that guy's corner for sure.
Same,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've had a few. We got Danny Stevens is working for us right now doing some stuff.
Nice.
And he's on the up and up in the kind of country world. He was in a band called The Audition.
Yep, yeah.
A lot of crew guys I've had for sure. I'm trying to think of any other artists. We've had a couple other bands. Some of the relationships didn't end very well.
Okay.
So I won't name their name.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, you know, it's always fun. And it's fun to like, you know, now that I'm kind of out of that world, for a long time it was funny. The first couple years of Daddy's Dogs, you know, I'd have people come through that I knew on tour and I'd be like begging, hey, please let me do after show for you. I will come serve it on a fucking golden tray for you.
Yeah.
Just like take the hot dogs. You don't even have to pay me. Just take the hot dogs. And now it's fun to like those same people are like, hey, our artist, you know, Post Malone, hey, we need to get Daddy's Dogs back in here. You know, like, okay, yeah, fucking let's go. And so it's fun to see that turn.
That's so cool.
You know, yeah, it's awesome. And being able to still work with those people that I've worked with for the past 15 years or whatever, now 20, but just in a different capacity. And like, you know, it's cool for me to like share that with them, you know, because they're all part of my story in a sense too, you know, because I probably took one little snip from something that a lot of them did and I'm applying it to what we're doing now.
Yeah. What festivals are you going to this year?
This year we're doing Highwater over in South Carolina.
Nice.
Railbird up in Kentucky. Bonnaroo again, of course.
Oh, Bonnaroo. I've never been to Bonnaroo.
Oh,
and I have buddies that go every year.
If you want to sling some hot dogs, let me know.
Dude, I mean, I feel like that might have to be a content bit. Like,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's got to be hectic at a place like Bonnaroo where you have that many people. Like, like that high volume has to be wild.
And we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. The first year, it was like me with like, I don't know, 8 other people out there. And we were, you know, you're working 24 hours a day, basically.
Yeah, because it's Bonnaroo. The culture is no sleep.
And like, we're in the campground, so they want food 24 hours.
Oh, you're seeing all kinds of people on all kinds of shit.
Exactly. And so we're like, you know, one of those days I remember walking between, and where they have you camp is so far away if you're a vendor.
Okay.
So it's like, it's literally like a mile from camping just back to the festival.
Oh, no shit.
And so I remember I walked like 87,000 steps one day and like looked and it was like 26 point something miles. And I was like, I think I just did a marathon.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me 20 something hours, but I did it. And so I want to get one of those stickers or some Bonnaroo marathon or whatever.
Yeah, dude,
you know?
That'd be a cool sticker.
Yeah, but shit, like it is a different beast, especially on this side of it. You know, when you're on the artist side, you get a little more, the festivals are like, it's almost a break from the regular. Oh, there's more people to help me on all this. When you're doing the food vending side, it's literally just like the wild, wild west. Like, they're basically like, there's your spot. Don't make a mess. Bye-bye. And then it's like, you're there to figure out, okay, all this, you know, all this. Or it's like, you're fitting within their footprint, like, you know, and it, hey, this changed since what we advanced, but you'll figure it out.
That's how it is with us, too. Yeah. With Raise Rowdy, we set up and do like an activation and sell our merch and play games with people, which, funny enough, we've actually done at some festivals. We've done a Raise Rowdy hot dog eating contest.
Oh, there's a collab waiting to happen.
That's what I'm
there,
saying, dude. Yes. Or we'll do like a beer pong, like leaderboard. Like we'll have an artist come over before the show, before the gates open and see how many cups he or she can sink. And then we'll have people like, we'll have like a prize at the end of it. And we'll see like, oh, beat John Langston in beer pong, like beat John's high score or something. Like, we'll do things like that. But like you said, like the advancing for that is completely different.
And oh,
like,
every time.
You find festivals that really know what they're doing, and then you find ones where like you're setting up and you're like, oh shit, well, we're just gonna have to figure this out. You know?
Oh man, there was, I won't name the company.
Yeah.
It was a while ago. It's since changed hands a few times, but the folks who used to run the CMA Fest in town, which you'd think CMA is like, this is going to be dialed.
Top of the line.
It's 20 years of just going. Like,
yeah.
They've done this before.
Yeah.
Well, the like concession company that they had didn't pull any fire permits for anybody.
Oh, no.
And most of the people coming to town are from out of town for that. You know, they're traveling on the festival circuit. And so they're expecting a lot of that shit to just be covered by what they're paying that concession company. And fire marshal comes and shuts everybody down except for us, because we were the only one with a fire permit from Tennessee or whatever. And so we're like slinging away. And then it was like all the people in line for them just came to us. So we just got fucking annihilated. And it was like, you had like one job. To like get food to these people,
yeah,
and like you couldn't do that, and it just blows my mind sometimes, like, you know, how disorganized some of that shit is on the administrative side coming into something.
Yeah, you'll have that sometimes for sure. Yeah, you'll have that on those big jobs.
Oh yeah.
So when you're not slinging dogs, running your business out on the scooter, what is Big Daddy doing for fun? What are some of your hobbies? Like, what do you like doing?
Man, I mean, really riding is it's my go-to thing. Like, if I'm need to clear my head, I need to go think.
Sounds like therapeutic almost.
It is, for sure. And it's like, you know, the challenge, there's like challenges of it. Really, you know, your phone's on all the time. I'm always going, even when you're driving a car, like you're checking your texts and that kind of thing half the time. And so it's really the one time I feel like that I'm like have to focus solely on what I'm doing, and I can't be like thinking about my phone and can't be thinking about the other things or I'll die, you know? Yeah. And so it's like, it's very in like, okay, now it's my time, and I'll go and ride a lot, especially when the weather's nice, you know, now until June before it gets too hot.
Yeah.
You know, I'll ride an hour a day just around a neighborhood just to like do that. That's partly what I'm doing with it's promotion half the time of like I'll just keep flyers or whatever, and I see someone, hand them a flyer for a free hot dog, or you know, going down to Franklin now, I'm probably gonna be doing a lot of that. You know, that's traveling, eating. I love trying new restaurants,
dude,
and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I do too. We do a segment when we're out on the road, and we don't acknowledge the song, but we call it Tried That in a Small Town with Matt Burrill, because me being old Yankee Doodle Dandy traveling through the South, going to all these festivals and all these like different club shows, we'll pull over to like a meet and three in like bumfuck Alabama. Mm-hmm. And we'll bring our content guy, and he'll have his camera, and it'll be such like a small town, they'll think that we're like the news or something.
It's like Guy Fieri here.
Yeah, they'll freak out, and it's just me trying to eat some greasy food after a smoke break, you know? Yeah. Like, it's just, but like trying different things, and Nashville's such a cool like culinary city. Like, there's so much here, and
it really
you have a little
is.
Bit of
it's
everything
insane.
Yeah, like you want good Mexican, you have that. You want great hot dogs, one of the best hot dog places in the fucking world, and Daddy's Dogs. You want like Mediterranean shit, like you can have the good Mediterranean stuff. Like, there's so many different like options for food here. Where are some of your spots that you like going to?
Oh man, really depends on the style I'm like feeling at the time. You know, if I'm gonna go a little more fancy, a little more upscale, I love Margot over on the east side.
Yes,
my friend is the executive chef there.
I took my girlfriend there for and some of her friends and her daughter there for her birthday.
Heck yeah.
Cafe Margot, that's a great
it's so,
spot.
So good. Change the menu every day. It's just like,
yeah,
it's, you know, how they do it is very rad. You know, there's some other great sit-down spots. Stateside and Printer's Alley, I like that a lot.
Okay.
The Noel has a make-ready's in there. They're doing a Alice in Wonderland thing right now.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cool. And, you know, on the, like, less bougie side of things, like, I love Neighbors. Oh, dude. I love those wings, and especially the Sylvan Park Neighbors. I used to live right down
the
street.
That's the OG, dude. Yeah. There's something special about the Sylvan Park Neighbors.
I used to live like 4 blocks down the road, and that's where Daddy's Dog started. It's literally like, you know, if I got off at like, okay, I dogged till like 10:30 in an event or something, I'd just walk to Neighbors half the time. And, you know, there's definitely a few times where they asked me to leave because I got a little too hammed. But for the most part,
it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you'd walk in and be like, you were on one last night. I was like, oh, I was. I don't even remember. Sorry.
I was just slinging dogs all day. I needed to unwind.
Yeah.
They say Neighbors. I'm your neighbor.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like Neighbors a lot.
I do. Yeah. They're great. Centennial as well. When we were building in 51st, everything in the nations, I really like. I live over there.
Yeah. It's such Rockando's cool.
Rockando's great. Maru is awesome. Sushi. Bringles is great. Nikki's Coal Fire is right there. I love their pizza. Yeah. I love
such a culture coming up in the nations. Yeah. Like talking about different areas that are coming up within the city. I put the nations right at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Like Red Bicycle's cool. Like there's so many cool things.
Unfortunately had a fire, so they're shut down for a little
shit.
Bit.
That's right. Yeah.
So but yeah, there's some 51st Tap Room, the Nation's Bar.
Oh, the Nation's Bar, bro. Yeah, I've been in there.
Their quesadilla slaps. Yeah,
you know Big Rob Snyder?
Yeah.
So I was at Big Rob. They do Revival, or they were doing Revival over at Rockando.
Okay.
And then we'd get done, and then we'd all walk over to the Nation's Pub.
Yeah.
And just good, greasy late night food.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's great. So yeah, I love all that kind of stuff, and it's right by my house. V&F Pho. Yeah. Or Deg Thai. I mean, those are just next level, dude. Deg Thai is like, golly.
It's absurd.
It's so good.
It's absurd.
It's so good.
And you don't know until you've tried it.
I know. That's the thing. The Jay's Special or the Green Curry are like my go-tos.
Yeah.
SS Guy is another one that I love. And Soy Cubano over on at the Wash in the East Side. I mean, dude, Nashville has such good food. Sometimes... like me and my girlfriend are on like a diet right now, and so we haven't been eating out at all. And like we've been eating at home, and so we were like, "Hey, let's do a cheat meal and go somewhere." And I was so overwhelmed that I didn't know. I was like, "I don't know what I want. Where do we go?" And then we ended up just going to like Mexican, you know, cheap Mexican. And you're like, "Okay, cool, chips and salsa, whatever." But like, you know, I was just there's so many good choices that it was like I can't just choose one.
Yeah.
You know.
So many options, which is what I like. One thing I wish that we did have, and I know like we had Hermitage Cafe back in the day, a late night dive. And I'm not talking about like the diner downtown's cool, but like there's like obviously the South and small town you have like Waffle House. I want there to be a Greek diner late night. Like I want to open up the freaking menu and it'd be like the size of the Bible. Like I want just like that back home in New York, we're spoiled.
Oh, yeah.
We're spoiled with the diners in Jersey and New York. Those late night all hour spots, you know?
I tried to reopen the Hermitage, I'll say that. I like made many calls to try to get that building before. And it was pretty much the day they closed, they pretty much knew who they were going to sign over with and do it with. But, that is something we do need.
Like late night sit down.
Yeah. Cheap, late night, easy sit down.
Affordable.
Greasy.
Affordable for the locals. Affordable for the guys and girls.
The diner's
getting off
Broadway. Too nice. For
yeah, that's
what
my
you're
thing.
About.
Like it's multi-level. And it's cool you can get sushi at the diner, but it's like... That's I want something that's just like that local divey kind of hang. Like Paradise
like you can get
Park
fuck,
was that
you
for
be
a while.
In the corner like passed out your buddy and you're like we're having a good time, our buddy's passed out, no one's really saying shit to us. I feel like that happens in the diner, they're like, "Sir, you need to take your friend outside, please." You know, and like he needs to go.
We just had a night out.
Yeah, he's just sleeping, dude. Like, let him sleep.
Yeah, we're going to bring him to life. We're going to order him some fries.
Yeah,
don't worry.
As soon as you bring that, you know, two-egg omelet over, he's going to wake his ass up and eat it.
Yeah, and we're going to get him a coffee. Don't worry. He's a paying customer. Yeah. His money's just as good as anyone else, even if he doesn't know it yet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's what I want. Where's like your favorite place that you've gotten to travel to? Because I know you've said you've gone international. Have you been to all 50 states?
Alaska's the last one. I need to go to Alaska. But I've been to every other state. I played a show in every state except for Hawaii and Alaska.
Wow.
So, yeah, I did all lower 48, which was crazy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to do a show in Hawaii, but go figure the manager for the band I was with decided to go to that one instead of taking the tour manager.
Yeah, that'll happen.
You know
that'll
happen. Yeah. happened in Australia as well, but we won't go there. No, man. I've been really lucky. Like, Morocco was amazing.
Sounds amazing.
Portugal. We spent a week in Portugal after our Morocco trip. That was amazing too. Like, just I love Europe. It's so like we have old and like Northeast is old.
Yeah.
But like Europe is fucking old, dude. Like this is medieval shit. You know, some of that stuff. And so it's just like a different thing. And like, you know, I love being over there. I really love the UK. I love London, Manchester, all that kind of stuff.
Can we see Daddy's Dogs go international? Is dog culture that big over there?
I don't know if it's big there. Japan, maybe. It would crush in Japan, I bet.
They eat a lot of hot dogs in Japan?
Yeah. It's like one of their biggest things.
Dude. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's still a ways out. I got to conquer, you know, I got to conquer Tennessee still. There's a few places we got to go around here. But one day.
One day.
Yeah.
It'd be fucking cool, dude.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's awesome. Well, dude, I appreciate you coming
dude,
on.
Dude, hell
seriously.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what's that ring you got on? Because that's some serious fucking bling right
oh,
there.
This is $6 from Amazon. and it's my scooter club is a their logo's diving bell.
Oh, that's sick.
So it's kind of just nautical themed, you know.
That's cool, bro.
Yeah.
I like that. That's awesome. I was looking at that. I'm like, what's that ring?
Yeah, everyone always asks, oh, it looks really cool. Really expensive. I'm like, $6, baby.
$6, got to rep the club.
You should have
baby.
Seen the other ones I got. It was like a skull with like a cigar smoking out of his hand. It was like $5. They came in like a kit.
That's
so I was
cool.
Like, you got like six of them or whatever for $30. Hell and I was like, you know, $5 a piece.
That's awesome. You a big cigar guy?
I'm not huge on cigars unless, you know, they're filled with wacky tobacco.
Everybody loves
we call those
spliff.
Blunts.
I like the little spliff.
Oh, a little spliffy?
A little spliffy.
Yeah. I haven't done nicotine. I used to smoke cigarettes. Well, I used to smoke DeJarms, cloves, just down them.
Oh, you're a clove guy.
Yeah, like a pack a day, dude. Like,
wow.
I just be fucking
I was a Diet Marlboro guy.
Okay.
I was a Marlboro Lights guy, especially when I moved down here and they went from being $12 a pack to like
$4 or $5
a pack because they're growing all the tobacco right up there in Springfield. Yep. So it was, but yeah, dude, where can people go to find out more about you and Daddy's Dogs and all you got going?
Well, obviously you can go to daddysdogs.com for all the hot dog needs. Follow us on the Instagrams and all that at Daddy's Dogs Nash. My personal is at Big Daddy Says. And I'm not super active on that, but, you know, I mostly use the Daddy's Dogs Instagram as my own at this point the time.
Yeah.
So it's just easier that way.
Hell
people
yeah,
see a little scope of my life mixed in with some hot dogs. So
hot dogs are life.
Exactly.
Hell yeah,
at this point.
Well, brother, I appreciate you so much for coming on, taking the time out of your busy week. And Nikki T and I got to pop by. You're usually hanging out over at the Nation's location?
Yeah, recently I've been, you know, going to all of our spots. So I've been in Madison or I've been in Franklin trying to figure out all the building stuff.
Okay.
But my office is over in the Nations. And once we get the other ones open, I'll probably be bouncing around for the first few
months. Yeah, dude. We'll have to come out and
text me. You got my number?
Get some Rays Rowdy. Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, dude. We'll fucking get after it. Well, y'all be sure to check out our boy, Big Daddy, Sean Porter, Daddy's Dogs. If you're visiting Nashville, it's a staple. You got to do it. If you already live in Nashville, you know. And if you don't know, you've been living under a fucking rock. Check out Daddy's Dogs, one of our favorite spots in town, part of the culture here in Nashville, Tennessee. And follow along with Mr. Big Daddy himself. Appreciate all y'all for watching, listening. As always, for more on us, visit RaisedRowdy.com. And give a follow, a subscribe, a like, all of that shit. Tell your mom and them. Well, for my man Big Daddy, I'm Matt Barrill. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks on my sleeve. They usually just make them leave. So if you know